From the, quote, rugged borderlands of Texas to the House chambers of the U.S. Capitol, it's the Texas Standard for Wednesday, February 25th. I'm Laura Rice. If you didn't tune in to President Trump's State of the Union Tuesday night, you missed what was the longest such speech we know of, at least since 1964, when such records started being kept. Texas came up again and again in the address, primarily in the form of guests hand-picked to attend the ceremony. From the Houston woman who was struggling to buy a home because corporations kept outbidding her, to a young survivor of the July 4th Central Texas flooding. Trump also invited a helicopter pilot credited with rescuing her and dozens of others, and presented him with a Legion of Merit medal. It was one of several awards given out during the ceremony, which provided some of the rare moments of bipartisan applause. Otherwise, the speech didn't seem to reflect how a majority of Americans are feeling about the country, at least according to recent polling. Trump called it a golden age for the U.S., credited himself with a turnaround for the ages, and perhaps was the first to describe the State of the Union in this way. Quote, we are the hottest country anywhere in the world. The hottest. For more on the content of this speech and how it might have landed with Americans, we turn to Lauren Rollins, an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at Texas State University. Professor Rollins, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate the opportunity.
And Joseph Morton, a politics reporter for the Dallas Morning News, Washington Bureau. Joseph, thanks so much for your time.
Great to be here.
Joseph, can you describe the tone of the speech and how it compares to, say, past State of the Union addresses?
Sure. And we see every president kind of puts their stamp on this address. And there's always a lot of grousing about this could have been an email. And, you know, why do we do this every year? But it is an important moment for really the president who is in the White House to set the table for what Congress should be doing. And in a year like this, to really frame the upcoming midterm elections. And we see President Trump right now under a lot of pressure in the polls, his approval ratings down. His immigration policies, which were a big reason why he won the White House again, coming under a lot of pressure with everything that's going on with interior enforcement. So this was really an opportunity for him to try and reset that. And some of it went well, some of it maybe not so much so. But it was I think, also one of the most interactive State of the Union addresses I've seen. Mm. There was a lot of shout outs to the gallery, obviously, mm-hmm. you know, awarding medals to different people and recognizing the gold medal men's hockey Olympic team, which came into the press gallery a few feet from where I was sitting. So yeah. We got a good up close look at those gold medals. So that was interesting. I'd never seen anything quite like that before. But yeah, I mean, we see, you know, we saw Joe Biden's last Day of the Union, where he came in and he was answering all the critics, saying he was, you know, being very lethargic and showing a lot of energy. We've seen a lot. We've seen presidents use these speeches for a lot of purposes. And President Trump was clearly out to try and recapture some momentum last night.
So, Lauren, the economy was a big focus for the president. Did Trump's attempt to address the economy work in your eyes?
I mean, I think it depends on what we mean by work. Mm. If we were trying to go for new policy ideas, give us, you know, an Excel file of updates, then, you know, no, not so much. But if it was a doubling down of recurring themes and maybe some information that the president believes very strongly in, then yes. And, you know, that rhetoric can work. We have seen it work with his base. But I think on the whole, this State of the Union was less about laying out new policy ideas. The speech relied heavily on a small number of recurring themes that were repeated and revisited. And that repetition was strategic, arguably. Mm. And I think to some extent, it reinforced salience rather than specificity. And maybe from the president's perspective, it probably felt more like a greatest hits album, the same themes kind of resurfacing in different keys.
Mm. Well, Joseph, you were in the room. I was limited to what the cameras showed. What did you see as far as Texas lawmakers in attendance? Who were the big names in the room, and was anyone notably absent?
Well, I was going to say that there was a notable lawmaker who became absent after he was escorted out of the chamber.
I did.
Congressman Al Green, for the second year in a row, was asked to leave by the sergeant at arms. After disrupting the speech, he held up a sign that said, you know, black people aren't apes, a reference to this video depicting the Obamas as primates in the jungle that was posted to a White House account. And at first, the White House defended that, then they took it down. And so again, last year we saw where he sort of stood up and raised his cane at the president and told him he didn't have a mandate to cut Medicaid. This year he had his sign. He held it up as President Trump walked by. A number of other lawmakers, including Congressman Troy Nels from Texas, Republican, tried to rip the sign away from him. He kept holding on to it. Hmm. Sergeant Arms came over, asked him to leave. He you know, complied and walked out. Among the others, the lawmakers who were there, both the Senator Ted Cruz, Senator John Cornyn, both Republicans were there. A number of Democrats skipped the session, either because they were back home campaigning or to make a point, or maybe both. Mm-hmm. Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett, who's running for Senate, was not there. Congresswoman Julie Johnson, who's running for re-election in a different district, was not there. And some of the other Democrats, like Congressman Greg Kassar, were participating in the counter-programming sort of Democratic protest events down the street.
What stood out to me was that contrast. Of course, early on, you had that moment of protest, which at this point has become a ritualized feature of modern State of the Union speeches. And then, of course, a short time later, you had the presence of the Olympic team. And of course, the Olympic team functions as one of the few genuinely unifying national symbols left. And the contrast is telling. It shows how the speech moved between division and shared identity. And for Texas in particular, symbols of national pride, strength, competition, those things do tend to resonate across party lines, which kind of helps explain why in those moments the figures associated with these themes received such strong reactions in the room, you know, from Al Green to the Olympians themselves.
Hmm. Well, Lauren, I want to stick with you for a minute here, because you both mentioned that the State of the Union is a chance for the president to lay out agenda items he wants Congress to tackle. We really didn't see that much of that last night. In fact, he notably said tariffs are an issue he can take up again without congressional action. What are your thoughts on why he didn't reach out for more congressional help?
I think, again, this idea that we're winning, reinforced by the presence of the Olympic team, I think, again, this is like a greatest hits album for the president. In some ways, it was more of a retrospective than a forward-looking approach, though arguably he's saying, hey, look what has, from my perspective, been done so well, things that I have changed or put in place. And we're just going to keep doing it. I think that was more the theme there.
Joseph, immigration came up again and again, really in examples of horrific cases involving single bad actors. Was that the primary way you heard him addressing his immigration crackdown?
Absolutely. And I want to say, yeah, I mean, sometimes you have State of the Unions that are about, let me lay out this long list of policy things I want enacted this year. This was all about the midterms. He is the president is very concerned about what's going to happen in November. And I think he wanted to sort of refocus on the issues where Republicans see that they have an advantage. One of those is on immigration, where they've kind of lost that advantage as people focus on interior enforcement and some of the aggressive operations by ICE in Minnesota that we've seen. He wanted to say, wait, remember when you elected me because of all these horrific examples of things that bad actors were doing? And I do think Republicans were giddy that they got that sort of sequence where he said, if you believe in prioritizing American citizens over illegal immigrants, stand up. And the Democrats all sat on their hands. I mean, now you will see that ad nauseum this fall in campaign attack ads against Democrats in swing districts. So, I mean, I think that was a big point of this speech. And, you know, in some ways it was effective, I think.
Yes. Rather than changing minds, speeches like this tend to reinforce existing priorities among voters. And for most voters, especially in primary elections, the speech is less about persuasion and more about confirmation. Primaries are about turnout, perhaps less so conversion. Mm-hmm. And there was a doubling down on that effort.
Well, Lauren, what else would you add? Any other big takeaways from the speech?
Yeah, I think, you know, in a room full of political disagreement, it's hard to boo Olympians. Mm-hmm. And we see a lot of symbols in this speech that were both powerful in at times sort of inciting some division, and at other times maybe temporarily suspending division. And I think the Olympian moment is what stood out for me.
Joseph, what do you think? Anything you'd add?
Well, I would just add kind of a postscript on the Al Green situation. We've seen a lot of politicians in these moments get censured and actually get a boost from that sort of high profile moment. Mm. He has a primary on Tuesday against U.S. Representative Christian Menefee, who won a special election. And we'll see if he gets censured for this and if that gives him a boost. It might be the kind of thing where he actually would welcome a censure to give him kind of that spotlight moment.
Well, and this Texas 9th Congressional District has been redrawn specifically to sort of make it hard for Green. Is that right?
Right. So he's running in a newly drawn district against Representative Menefee. And yeah, it's the primary is going to be difficult for him, it appears. And so he might very well welcome kind of getting that boost among the party base.
Joseph Morton is politics reporter for the Dallas Morning News Washington Bureau, and Lauren Rollins is an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at Texas State University. Thank you both for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.